This week on the Nittany Dispatch, we discuss James Franklin's first offseason press conference, the introduction of Justin Lustig as special teams coordinator, and Penn State's freshman speaking to the media for the first time. This week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I'm John Sauber, Penn State football beat writer at the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder, covering Penn State for The Athletic. And Audrey, for the first time in, I think, a month and a half, right? About that, we spoke to James Franklin.
It's been a while. We're recording this on Wednesday, February 14th, also known as Valentine's Day, also known as Ash Wednesday, also known as Pitchers and Catchers Reporting Day.
Yes, and Penn State playing Michigan State men's basketball as well, because, of course, why not?
Sure. I mean, that's – John, I know you love covering Penn State basketball, so you will be there later tonight.
I will. I just got to say, between having a game at home on my birthday and on Valentine's Day, like, somebody talk to somebody. There's no need. We don't need to do this every year.
Big Ten scheduling, John would like a word. That's right. You and I, we both were at the – Big Ten duel, or not the Big Ten, the BJC duel the other night for wrestling. The Big Ten,
showing your wrestling expertise, Audrey.
Yes. Yeah, both teams that competed were in the BJC, and they are both in the Big Ten. But yeah, it's that time of year, which I think is kind of the crazy thing with February, is that you get these football events, John, that they kind of suck you back in, right? And you're admittedly
busy.
Yes, and you're admittedly, like I felt this way, you're dusting through some cobwebs. You're working off the rust because, you know, I was at wrestling the last, you know, last few days, and you've been at basketball, and you bounce around. You keep an eye on some of the other things that are happening and who's coaching where in this sport. And then it's like, oh yeah, we're talking to Penn State. Now they're second-year players, and we're talking to James Franklin. And oh yeah, they hired a special teams coach, and we need to talk to him. So you're like, we're working through this, and that's what this week has felt like. But I thought there were some interesting things that came out of yesterday in the BJC media room.
Yeah, and a snowstorm, of course, that nicely it mixed was into like,
it. The snow melted, John. It was actually like Let best case scenario way. For us. Not much snow.
Yes, 100%. But it was also more of an anticipated snowstorm, and it did snow a lot. We were all just mostly asleep when it happened, specifically me, although I was up when the snow started to fall at about, I think it was like 2 o'clock Tuesday morning, I guess, technically.
It's because the BJC duel, you were awake after that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's blame the BJC duel for my horrendous sleep schedule. But no, I think you're right. The first time we talked to James in a while, like you said, it feels like you're dusting off the cobwebs a little bit, like trying to reacclimate yourself to being on the football beat after just doing other stuff for a while, right? Like, and there's still like, this is what makes February so busy. You mentioned the other availabilities, having the BJC duel on Monday. There's also the return to Rec Hall men's and women's basketball games next week. Like, if this is all mixed,
I'll be there.
Yeah.
Making my season hoops debut.
Genuinely surprising. But the intermingling of it all in this, like, it's not really football season, but winter workouts are going on. It is wrestling and basketball season. But
we're
like
a month away from spring ball.
Yeah. Like all of this is coming together at once. Mm-hmm. And so like when you prep to sit down and we're going to ask James questions and stuff, you got to go through like the checklist of stuff. And one of the most, I think, important things that we got to was the addition of all these transfers, right? Like, this was the first time we had talked to James since they made the transfer portal additions. And, you know, he spoke about Julian Fleming, AJ Harris, Nolan Rucci for the most part. He didn't really get to Jalen Kimber, which hopefully next time we talk to him, we can get some more on that. Something, you know, I think we all wish we would have
been
able to ask him about. Yeah. But I do think that he was enlightening on some of those guys. I'm curious. We can start with any of the three.
Julian Fleming.
Right. Like that's the correct answer. But what was your biggest takeaway of what James said about Julian Fleming?
You know, the takeaway for me, and this isn't, I'm not saying this, like I'm not surprised by this, but it was that so far so good, right? James said he's gotten good reports from the strength staff on Julian Fleming, which is what you'd expect from a graduate transfer, that he's come in, he's kind of just put his head down and gone to work. That's what, you know, it seems like, and everything I've heard and know about Fleming is you talk about a low maintenance guy, right? And we hear about that from James Franklin so often, that when they're looking to add to the program, they want guys that they refer to as low maintenance, high production. Well, it certainly sounds like from the reports that James Franklin said he's getting and from what we've kind of gathered about Julian Fleming is that like the low maintenance part is checking out. Now, are they going to get the high production? Franklin even said on all the transfers, we'll see what happens this spring. They didn't go into this portal wave guaranteeing anybody starting jobs. At least that's what they said. But we all know there's an immediate need at wide receiver. So for me, it was just that James actually said so far, so good with Fleming. Again, he's been here a little more than a month. And we're a little bit less than a month from spring ball starting. So you're in that in-between period, right? John, we heard a lot too about the rigors of the morning workouts. That's what this month is about. Yes. I don't want, if anyone's eating right now, you might want to pause the podcast because there were some descriptions that we got from guys about this.
Yeah. And real quick on Fleming, you mentioned, you know, they don't promise starting jobs. I don't think they had to. I think Julian probably could have turned on the film from last year and assumed he's got himself a starting spot at Penn State, which I'd be stunned if he doesn't. But yeah, we talked to a lot of guys, a lot of the freshmen, during the freshman media day, for lack of a better term. Right.
But now they're second year guys, John.
Right. Like that's what, like, well, they're in their freshman. Some of them are in their freshman year still. Some of them,
but if you're early enrolled,
past 30 credits, like it's whatever. It's guys who are on the team for the first time in 2023. That's who we talked to this year.
Guys who were here last year.
Yeah. And, you mentioned those winter workouts and I keep going back to the water bags. Because I believe it was Jameel Lyons who said that those made him throw up last year. Anthony Donka said he has the hoop drills that they do, he has a hard time with, but actually didn't mind those water bags. But the water bags really felt like the thing that everyone continued to talk about as being the source of misery during these winter workouts. We got a little bit of info about what they are because you're holding the water up and it's moving in your hands, so it's tough on your balance. But frankly, I don't ever plan on finding out how difficult they are. I don't know about.
I was going to say, John, we're not volunteering to go through a winter workout. I can tell you that. No one would like the end results. Although I'm sure there's some people in the building that would love to see the beat go through a winter workout.
I'm barely going through winter. Like there's no need to add a workout to this. Like every morning I leave the house is a win. Like, cause it's just so much easier just to stay in the basement and watch TV.
Media availability was the workout for him.
Right.
Tony Rojas, I think, put it really succinctly. He said that first winter workout, he's like, listen, he's like, there's no shame in guys throwing up. Like the first workout, it happens for most people. And he's like, you know, a paraphrasing here, but he said something along the lines of, as long as you throw up and keep moving, the coaching staff is okay with it. That it's, you know, if you stop or if you put your hands on your knees when you throw up, that's like apparently a no-no. So you can't do that. So yeah. And that's, you know, that's so much of, that's what this time of year is. It's behind the scenes. It's us talking to people and saying, hey, how does this guy look? Or how is this guy gaining this weight? Right. Like I was talking to Tony Rojas and one of the things that came up was, you know, that 30-pound weight gain that he was going through last year at this time after he early enrolled. And he said that the coaches would make jokes about, you know, he was too skinny. And he's like, but in my heart, I knew they weren't jokes because I knew I needed to gain this weight. And so, of course, you know, you do that with the nutrition staff. You talk about resources that you're dumping into a program that is super, super important. And one of the things I was listening to audio earlier today, like I left a recorder at Rojas. I was there for part of it. And Max Ralph, great student reporter, had this, which I think is a great anecdote. He was talking to Tony Rojas and he was asked about the weight gains. Tony said that Chipotle was his go-to. And Max asked for his order. So Tony Rojas consumed in the last year a lot of white rice, black beans, double chicken, pico, corn, and lettuce. So I don't know. That seems like an NIL deal in waiting, John.
We need to have a larger discussion in the world of sports about Chipotle. I don't know if you saw this. I think it was a few weeks ago. Mikal Bridges said essentially that he, of the Brooklyn Nets, of course, in the NBA, said that he eats Chipotle like every day, essentially, right? And
seems like a lot.
I'm sure he won't mind me sharing this, but I also do the Nitty Gritty podcast with Tim Frazier, and I was talking to Tim off the air a little bit, and he told me he essentially lived that life when he was at college. And I don't fully understand how this happens. Why, like, how are people in this world so routine oriented? And why Chipotle? Why is it consistently Chipotle?
Well, because it's protein, right? It's you're getting your meat, your rice. Like if you're trying to bulk up in a semi good way, right? Like you can't.
These guys are like in season. But these guys are in season. You're not trying to bulk up when I'm talking about the NBA.
Yeah, but maintaining weight, right? So this came up at wrestling last week when I was there, making my spot debut there. Because obviously you talk about crazy weight fluctuations. And Aaron Brooks said that throughout the course of one workout, he can lose 6 pounds. Right? Oh, so think about that, John. How much Chipotle is that, right? Like, it's so crazy when you try to conceptualize what high level athletes, what they can consume. So maybe that's the thing, John. We will send you to Chipotle this off season and see how many days in a row you can go and report back.
Listen, if it's on your tab, I'll do it. Chipotle ain't getting any cheaper. It was funny, you know, you mentioned the weight gain and stuff. We talked to Elliot Washington. One of the things he said was like that he's put on, I think it was 10 pounds, and he hasn't really noticed it. And I was like, man, you and I are the same. Like, I also don't have any clue what I put on 10 pounds.
Here we are.
we're basically the same person because of that. But no, I think, you know, this is a transition for a lot of those guys, right? Like some of them are actually going through their first winter workouts. You know what I mean? Right. Like the guys that came in the summer, there's guys that this is their second time because they were the early enrollees, but they're also like, we talk about those transfers, like, I mean, I'm sure Julian Fleming isn't like having this massive adjustment, and AJ Harris probably isn't. But like maybe things are different down at Florida, right? Like maybe for Jalen Kimber, maybe things are different at Wisconsin in the way that not necessarily like the difficulty, but like the way they do it could make it more difficult, right? So those adjustments I think are going to be important too, because we talk about like weight gains and stuff. One of my biggest takeaways that James mentioned during his press conference was he was talking about Nolan Rucci and said the difficulty in putting weight on him, right? Like, yes. Because he is every bit of 6'8", which is true. Like he is very, very tall. And he just has had a hard time getting weight on. He said he was originally listed, I believe, at 299, but he's now up to 305. The roster lists him at 300 still, I think. But if, you know, you take James' word for it, which we have no reason not to, like 6 pounds and whatever this has been, like a little over a month is good progress for someone that size. Can play at like 330, 340 pretty easily and look slim still. Like that's not, you see that a lot in the NFL, like with defensive ends, especially guys that are 6'5", like weigh like 270 and they look like they're like 220. Right. And so I think that's going to be one of the biggest things that I'm watching moving forward, because this tackle spot is one that we're going to be talking about, I imagine, all through spring ball, potentially all through fall camp. But Nolan Rucci being able to add weight and add the requisite strength to hold up in the Big Ten as a starter, because he did it against LSU in their bowl game for Wisconsin. But doing it week after week is a different animal, especially when maybe you're not dealing with as many speed rushers in the Big Ten and there are more power rushers. I'll be curious to see, like, can he get to point X, like whatever that is for them, by the end of spring ball? Can he get to point Y by the end of fall camp, to the point where he's actually competing at that job with the body type that they want him to, and if he's able to keep kind of that mobility and stuff? Because I mentioned Washington, like the fact that he didn't notice the 10-pound gain, like that's different for a corner and safety, you know, than it is for an offensive tackle, where he might notice it a lot more as he continues to add it.
Yeah, that was one of the things that Tony Rojas said that last year. He said, yeah, going into spring ball last year, he's like, I felt heavy. Like I felt it when I was running, you know? And so much of this offseason for Rojas is about his speed and getting back to that level where he feels, you know, comfortable with all of this new weight. But yeah, I did want to go back to some of the stuff you said about Nolan Rucci. I'm fascinated to see what happens at offensive tackle in the spring. And then of course in the fall, James Franklin did say on Tuesday that he feels like team-wide, they're in a good spot to have a good competitive spring game, which I'm sure is what our listeners love to hear. They love a good blue-white game because of the
depth. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't he say that last year too, though? Like and I know they got bit by injuries and stuff.
Yeah,
I swear probably, he said that last year.
Honestly, I feel like the spring games, I just wipe them from my memory so quickly that I could not even tell you. I know I was there, but I could not tell you anything about the blue-white game. I do think, though, you mentioned kind of what are those target weights. I would like to ask, you know, Nolan Rucci, what is that weight that they have in mind for him? Because you have Drew Shelton, you have Nolan Rucci, but then you have someone else, well, many other else's that we can get to. But one of the things that came up with talking to the second-year players was that of those four signees, right? You had Chim Diono, Anthony Donka, Javon Williams, and Alex Birchmeier. Birchmeier's the only one still working along the interior. So you've got three young offensive tackles developing, which is massive. Like, you look at the trajectory of this program. Obviously, yes, you have to replace two starting spots this year with Caden Wallace and Olu Fashanu. But Anthony Donko is going, I think, to be a factor in this equation one way or the other. And the thing that I found to be so interesting, and you and I, we've talked about it on here and we've written plenty about it, as of others, his performance in the Peach Bowl, right? Comes in, plays the second half with Caden Wallace, you know, moving on to the NFL. And we were all impressed by that in that moment, right? I know you and I were, right? It was like, wow, where did this kind of come from? This is interesting. After talking with him on Tuesday, I am even more impressed, John, because he told us he didn't start repping at offensive tackle until the start of bowl prep. So literally within a month, he went from working along the inside, he was a guard, shifting over to right tackle. That's insane.
And when you say he told us, you literally mean us, because it was you
it
and
was
I,
us,
I
believe, yeah.
the only one sitting there. But no, I was, when he said that, like I kind of had to double take. And I think you, cause I originally asked it, then you followed up and you're like, wait, so you're saying you didn't do it until the bowl game? And he's like, yeah,
I was as anyone watching us on YouTube knows, I'm not good at hiding my expression. So I was like, wait, to be clear, you did that how? And he started to laugh. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. And if you go back and rewatch that game, the initial impression is the correct impression. He was, I wouldn't like, he wasn't like elite or anything, but for a freshman making mm-hmm. His first career in-game reps at right tackle, he was excellent. He did more than what you could expect. And I have to imagine, assuming that translates over to, you know, spring ball and fall practice, that I think the lightest way to put it is that he will heavily factor in. Because if he plays like he did against Ole Miss, then he's probably a starter. And if he's not a starter while playing like that, it's because they've got two other starters who are playing at an incredibly high level, right? Like, I think that
they're going to play. They're going to rotate, because I think that's what James Franklin even said with Nolan Rucci, is like, we loved what we saw at Wisconsin, but there just weren't that many opportunities. And he even said something along the lines of, they didn't rotate like we do here, right? So I think that's, of course, the other angle of this is you're going to find a way to get him on the field. I was pulling it up last year. Donko, his snap counts, was in the 90s for the season. So again, for a freshman, that is a significant number. Especially with the bulk of them coming at the end of the year.
Yeah, especially when I believe he redshirted, right?
Yes. Yep.
So like to get a start in a year and like a really good start in a year where you're redshirting is a really good sign for Penn State mm-hmm. to preserve that year of eligibility. Now, if he is that good, the redshirt year is probably not going to matter at the end of the road. But still, it's good to have that available. And he's very impressive. He's on the field, but like talking to him, like he's clearly enthusiastic about this. He was there for a while, right? Talking to us, and he seemed to be enjoying himself.
They didn't tell these guys that they could leave. Maybe that was the catch, right?
but he seemed to really take to playing tackle. And that he said, I asked him what he liked mm-hmm. more, and he said he liked the challenge of playing outside. And you know, he said like it's different because obviously, and some of this is obvious, but it's always good to hear these guys' perspectives. Like that speed off the edge is different, right? Like you're mm-hmm. dealing with things differently. And the way you handle yourself and your footwork and everything is a lot different. And so I'll be curious to see if he's putting that together with a limited practice window ahead of the Peach Bowl. I'm curious to see what that looks like when he gets real practice reps and really gets to work on it, because he looked good then. And I have no reason to think that he wouldn't be good, you know, moving forward. And so you know, if we get to the end of the 2024 season and you tell me that Anthony Donka is more reps than any offensive tackle on the roster, like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, right? Like, I think, I don't know that that's my expectation right now, just because a lot can change between now and the fall, but it is well within the realm of possibility that he's either their best or their most used offensive tackle next year. And that, by the way,
I still think Shelton is your top guy. I think and then we'll see with Rucci. It looks like John disagrees with me on this. We will see. Maybe this mm-hmm. is like our new gamble next season. We'll keep tabs every week. I'll report on Christian Driver's stats at Minnesota. I'll also report on the offensive line snap counts.
Keeping track of Dante Cephas over Kansas State.
Yes, that's right. Our weekly Cephas tracker.
That's right.
one of the things that I always like to ask the players in a setting like this, and it's something I started doing a few years ago, and then yesterday as we were talking, I said, oh, shoot, I always ask this. I should ask this because it's entertaining. I like to ask players, what is the moment, or is there a moment where they feel like, welcome to college football? Like, maybe you got absolutely rocked on the practice field. Maybe it happened in a game. Maybe you threw up during a winter workout and you're like, this is different, right? Because it happens to everybody. And I remember talking to Micah Parsons about this and Jesse Lucchetta and all these guys that have come through here, right? Like, everybody has these moments. It's part of the process. There's no shame in it. And there are some really good moments that I'm compiling, and I will have them up on The Athletic this week. So I don't want to give them away, but Anthony Donko had a really good one that you and I were there for, John. But that'll be up on The Athletic. Just some nice intro to college football moments.
What's funny is I didn't know you ask this every year. I also asked this because last year, I think, was the first year we had the Freshman Media Day.
Imitation's the highest form of flattery.
I didn't know you did it. And I asked,
because I started it the year we got, and again, it's not like a highly original question, but the year we got Parsons, we had a media day in the spring that year.
You got Parsons when I think I was still in college. No, I wasn't in college.
Maybe, yeah. It was a while ago.
I think that was actually my first or second year as the secondary beat writer. Something like that.
So you weren't there, John. Yeah. So you didn't That's hear true. Me asking my very unoriginal questions.
But I do ask the same, and it is interesting that you mentioned that. And you know, we can talk about it more once your story goes up. But I do think a lot of these guys, like, this isn't their like that moment for them. That's not the realization moment. But it was interesting to hear a lot of players yesterday talking about the mental aspect and the mental adjustments to playing in college. And the one that kind of stuck with me was King Mack said that in high school, it was just like see ball, get ball. And that was it. Right? Like there was nothing more to it. He didn't like necessarily, there's not a lot of film study, not a lot of scheme, not a lot of any of that. It's just you're out there playing. And then you get to college and it's a complete game changer. And I think that's what makes it more impressive that a guy like him, guys like Zion Tracy and Elliot Washington, you know, Tony Rojas to some extent, were able to get on the field specifically defensively, because there's, I'm not saying it's more difficult, but I think it's probably a greater adjustment from playing high school defense to college defense than it is high school offense to college offense. It's still a drastic jump to do it on offense, but on defense, like there are some guys who were saying like, essentially like there was no like anything. It was just, I'm out, you're across from me, I'm covering you. And that's it. And like, or you know what I mean? Like you're in front of me.
I'm going to shut you down. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to try and beat you off the line of scrimmage. Right. Like that's it. And that's all they did in high school. And then they get to college and it changes drastically. So the fact that all those guys
All right, John, you're muted.
Just mute myself.
You did. You did. It was the best 20 seconds of the podcast we've ever had.
That's tough for me to hear.
There he is. There he is. You're back. You're back.
But no, where did I get cut off here by myself on this?
Yeah, you were getting into it, and you're talking about the differences in the games at the high school level.
Yeah, yeah.
From this level and the transition.
I think it's really impressive that Rojas and Mac and those guys and Tracy and Washington were able to see the field so early, despite having to make a really drastic jump out of high school.
Yeah. And I think this is where the question of AJ Harris comes into the equation, right? We talked about the transfer additions. John asked James Franklin about AJ Harris. And I like the way you phrased the question, John, because you asked him what made AJ Harris the right fit, right? Because Penn State could have taken any cornerback they wanted out of the portal, or just about anyone, right? I mean, you look at the run that they're on here, the guys they've churned out, this is in destination type spot for a lot of young corners, but you get a young, talented corner. And the thing that stood out to me was James Franklin said that they don't think much has changed, if anything, in the evaluation that they had on AJ Harris, which the five-star cornerback that Penn State recruited out of high school, versus the guy that they're now getting a year later, right? So that's significant. I know you and I have talked before, John. We said had Penn State signed him last year, fans would have been over the moon about the addition. Well, now you get him in the program. And so again, how he fits in with the rest of those corners is going to be interesting. I did not get too many of the cornerbacks. I was kind of bounced around a lot of the offensive linemen, the linebackers. So was that, did that come up, John, any of your conversations? Was there any AJ Harris? Are you the AJ Harris beat writer now?
Not necessarily. It came up somewhat, wasn't a major sticking point. And for those interested, you know, you mentioned what you have coming up soon on The Athletic. I'll have, you know, I talked to a lot of those corners and those guys in the secondary and that transition to college and kind of what they expect and what they want to accomplish. And like specific goals and things like that. So we'll have something, you know, Center Daily Times up on centerdaily.com here sometime over the next week or so on that. But I think that the general vibe of that was similar to what James said about Julian Fleming, about how Julian came in and shut his mouth and opened his ears, right? Like, and then respect you that way. And I think that's presumably how it's going in the cornerback room too, based on the way that guys talked about him, based on, you know, the fact that he is in the same graduating class of high school as these guys, right? Like, this is not a situation where it's like Jalen Kimber, where he's been around, he sees things, right? Or Julian Fleming at wide receiver, where he's seen things, he can involve himself, and from a leadership standpoint, because he's been there, done that. Harris is in the same group as these guys, right? Like, this is a a guy going into his second year of college ball, and it's a, you know, it's still a work in progress for him too, much like it is for Tracy and Washington and Mac and you know, all of those corners, even to some extent Cam Miller too, right? So I think that's one thing that I'm curious to see. There are, I don't want to say everyone's a starter quality piece, but I think Cam Miller is solidly, like, that's a starting level cornerback in the Big Ten. We know that. I feel confident that Elliott Washington is a starting level cornerback in the Big Ten. I know the Ole Miss game was not great for anybody, but based on what we've seen out of him this year, I feel confident saying that. I also think he could play at safety, frankly. I have not seen enough of AJ Harris to make that determination. I think Zion Tracy, as he gets stronger, will also be a starting level cornerback. But right now you have Cam Miller's a starter. We know that, right? Like, we're confident we can pencil him in right now.
Let's count and him,
then,
John.
And then to rotate in, you have Harris, you have Kimber, you have Washington, and you have Tracy. And so you are now up to, you have one starter and four guys with probably fighting for two spots. Like, I think Tom Allen's Husky Rule, which is it's a nickel corner linebacker.
Love that name.
Safety. It's someone playing in the back seven who isn't a linebacker purely, right? Instead of three linebackers. That whoever the Husky ends up being, like, I could see Washington fitting in that spot really well. I actually think King Mac would be really good in that role, especially because he talked about, this is one of my favorite things yesterday. He talked about how he's 5'9", but plays like he's 6'4", which I think is excellent. And you know, it's one of those things where he's just like, he just always views himself in that way. But yeah, King was excellent to speak to, by the way. He's going to be a prominent voice when I do that story, but he is a guy that would fit in that role too. So, like, you have the five guys, and then also King Mac could take that Husky spot. And so then you're really rotating in, even though, like I said, Cam Miller's probably going to start based on my eye and based on what we've seen. I do think he'll rotate quite a bit, like, just as, or will rotate more than they even did last year. And we'll see, you know, the snap counts reflect that, right? Where it's maybe not, you have corner one and corner two, but you really have, like, corner one, corner one A, corner one B, corner two, corner two B, and then also anyone who's playing the Husky also gets some reps there.
Corner two B and corner not two B.
All right, I think that's probably the best place to end the pod. And I don't mean this episode.
I'm just getting warmed
up.
I mean
forever. Like, never record again. I'm done. I can't do this.
Well, John, you mentioned things ending, never doing things again. That's my transition. James Franklin mentioned a lot of non-negotiables. That he said that when he was interviewing for, you know, obviously when you replace three coordinators in one offseason, you've got a lot of interviews to do. But he said with each coordinator, as he went through the process, he wanted to know what were their non-negotiables. Now, we're talking things in terms of the terminology, right? For you come in, if you're the offensive coordinator, are you going to change the terminology, or what can you keep the same? Are there certain calls that are close enough that maybe to lessen the confusion, to try and flatten that learning curve with the offense, you try and keep some of that the same. Some of the challenges for the defense, right? Maybe Manny Diaz wanted certain things run a certain way, and Tom Allen wants it run differently, right? So these are all part of these non-negotiables that Penn State's working through. And that, to me, was really like the theme of Tuesday. Transitions, right? You're talking transitions from your first year of college, your first year of college football, to your next. You're talking about the transition from one coordinator to the next. And I spoke with quarterback Jackson Smolik for a little bit, and he said that, you know, it's been nice to see Andy Kotelnicki's energy so far in the meeting room, and that one of the things that they're trying to keep the terminology the same. So that, I think, you know, I'm curious, you know, the next time we hear from Drew Aller, like I'd be curious to know what that process is like for him as they go through this. Obviously, we know Danny O'Brien is going to be the primary voice in that room with leading that room. But yeah, what are some of those transitions that are happening? And because it was the first time we had a chance to talk with Tony Rojas since Manny Diaz left, I asked him about, I remember last year at the end of games, we would catch a lot of scenes on the sideline where, you know, game would be ending, they'd be singing the alma mater, and Rojas would be like asking Manny Diaz a bunch of questions about his performance and about what he can do better and, you know, should I have done this or that? And so I asked him about those moments, and he said, you know, that Manny was such a great teacher for him and that he felt like he really did a nice job of not getting him on the field too early, right? That the whole thing was, let's bring you along on special teams and then we'll kind of see where things go from there. So it's different with Tom Allen. And that's what Tony Rojas said. He said, I'm not saying it's good or bad. It's just that it's different, right? The way he talks is different. The way he teaches is different. And these are the kinds of things, just these humanistic elements that you need this transition period, this acclimation period in this offseason to kind of figure out, because you are talking about your whole, I mean, these are massive changes, and to have three coordinator changes in one offseason, it's certainly rare around here. And we did get to meet coordinator number three, John, the newest of the new coordinators.
Yeah, Justin Lustig spoke to the media for the first time, of course, coming from Vanderbilt, where he's a special teams coordinator. It's tough. If you're wondering why we're 30 minutes into this podcast and now we're discussing the new coordinator, it's because it's really difficult to assess how good a special teams coordinator is, right? Like when Andy Kotelnicki and Tom Allen get hired, you and I can sit here and wax poetic for hours about, like,
well, and to be fair,
system, how they're going to do things.
For 15 seconds, you muted yourself, so we would have been here sooner, but, you know.
All right, fair enough. But no, I do think, like, it's just more difficult to evaluate what Lustig could be doing, what they're going to plan on doing. I've said this before, like, it's really difficult to evaluate for me anyways, like kickers and punters and everything. And so I do think, though, he said all the right things, right? He mentioned he rooted for Penn State from afar. Like, he would check their scores.
Pennsylvania guy, yeah.
Yeah, coach at Edinburgh. I had asked him about, like, coaching defense again, right? Because he hadn't – he mentioned that he was coaching the defense when he was the head coach at Edinburgh in 2016. But if you go back before that, the last time he was a position coach on defense was 2005. I believe – yeah, 2005 at a D3 school, I believe.
Yeah, because he coordinated the defense at Edinburgh. But before that, it was a significant amount of time.
And so it's, I asked him about that transition. He mentioned all of the things that he has seen as an offensive coach, and he knows how they operate and what that can bring to the defensive room, which I think is really interesting, right? Like, I think it's going
really
to
good
help.
Perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a perspective. Like, it's why Rob Smith was working presumably with the offense last year, right? Like, you get that defensive perspective for the offense. It's why this is famously, Vic Fangio was working with the Eagles offense ahead of the Super Bowl last year, because he was helping the offense understand what, like, the defense was about to do and everything. So
I thought we were going to make it, John, a full podcast without an Eagles mention, and we didn't.
Have you met me? Of course we're not gonna. Like, we're never.
I knew how this was gonna go. I knew.
Yes. You know. So did I.
we both knew.
But no, I think he's in a unique position to help the defense out, and I think he's going to, in all likelihood, like, produce good special teams here, right? The data backs up that maybe it's not, you know, even as good as Stacey Collins or necessarily the best in the country, but I don't think that special teams will be a negative for the program moving forward or anything like that. And also he mentioned he hasn't mentioned like the evaluated the kickers and punters, because they've been going through winter workouts. And it's like,
that's what I said to him.
What are you
going to
learn?
Yeah, I was like, you know, I understand you haven't been here long, but do you have any early impressions so far? And it was pretty much like, he was very nice about it. He was like, no, we've just kind of gone through winter workouts, and it's fair. But it's also like, we know that you're bringing in a transfer kicker, right? You have a new kicker. You have to replace your kicker. And that's what kind of opened the door to my other question, because I was full of special teams questions yesterday. A lot of questions. I wanted to know, given the importance of the transfer portal, right? Is Penn State still going to be a program that is going to heavily, or, you know, as heavily as a team does, recruit kickers out of high school? Are they still going to do that and invest scholarships in high school kickers? Because you look at the success that they've had bringing in guys out of the portal. You can also look at it at punter. We've seen it last year with Riley Thompson, and we'll continue to see it because we know he's got more eligibility remaining. What's the value of recruiting a high school specialist? Is there? And he, you know, Justin Lustig said it's something that they're kind of working through, because you look at it and he said, you know, we're going to recruit a lot of preferred walk-ons, and that's going to be the thing. And you kind of, you know, you go about it that way. So I just wonder if maybe we see a bit of a philosophical shift in the recruitment of scholarship kickers and punters out of high school with this program, because it is something where, you know, you go back and you look at it and you say, okay, you know, right now we're looking at two scholarship specialists in Sander Sahadek, and you had Alex Paqueta before we left for Rice, and you say, okay, well, if Sahadek isn't the guy, why did you add somebody from the portal, right? And I don't know, he could be the guy, right? But I'm just saying, you added someone. You look at Riley Thompson, the return you got there. So I just wonder if, you know, we can even go back farther, right? Jordan Stout was kind of their first big portal get. You look at what Alex Falcons was able to do. And this is a question that I have all throughout kind of college football, of is the value of the high school kicker and punter still what it once was, or is that something that the portal has changed? So that was my burning question.
That was, you were referring to freshman, senior, sophomore Riley Thompson.
Yes. From Australia.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Never junior, I think. Never junior. No, maybe never sophomore, actually. Because now a junior, last year was senior.
But he already walked at senior day once. Yeah.
So, it went, I believe, as we discussed at length on this pod one time. Honestly, shocked that I ended up being right about that. Like, genuinely stunned that I ended up being right that he had 2 years left. But it was freshman, senior, junior, and then senior again.
I don't know if ever junior. Yeah.
You'll never be listed as a sophomore.
Senior day. Yeah, he's going to be like 30 by the time he runs out of eligibility here, maybe.
That's right. But I think your philosophy is like, or what you're hinting at is correct, right? I don't see a reason for teams to go to high school kickers and punters with scholarships, right? Like, it feels more like a thing you try and get preferred walk-ons. You know, you try and help guys with NIL and stuff like that. And then you move on to, okay, if we don't have anyone here, you go to the portal every year if you have to, right? And maybe eventually one of the preferred walk-ons hits and you have a scholarship guy until his eligibility's out. And you don't have to worry about it. But to me, like, I think that is probably the best strategy moving forward. It saves a scholarship for another position that is going to see the field more, you know, and it puts you in a spot where, frankly, like, you can, I have to imagine, I don't know this for certain, that it's a little bit easier to recruit those guys, right? Because if you see a smaller school guy doing well, you kind of can just go get them, right? Like, there's not a ton of,
you can go with the Alex Falcons route, right?
Yeah, there's no like, oh, is he a fit at the position? Mm-hmm. Like, the way we do it, it's like, he's kicking. Like, that is not going to change too drastically from program to program. So I do think that is right. I think that is probably the best way to handle it moving forward. I'm curious to see if that's what they do. But yeah, it was nice to talk to Lustig today after, I don't know, it's been what, 3 weeks since we...
Yeah,
since
I believe he was hired January 17th, because I had to look that up in my story. So yeah, it had been a little while. And, you know, this is that that interesting time frame where we'd mentioned earlier, you've got spring ball starting up in mid-March after Penn State comes back from spring break, which is like, all of this is rapidly approaching. And then you've got Penn State's pro day that'll happen in March, right? And we did find out on Tuesday, Penn State will have 10 players at the combine, which is a massive number. And so that'll be, again, this has become like the combine's become a showcase event for Penn State. This is something we saw a lot with Dwight Gault. It's carried over to it with do we call it not even a new strength staff, but the new look, same kind of strength staff with Chuck Lose.
I think there have been, I don't want to call them significant, cause I don't want to exaggerate it, but I think there have been, changes, for sure. Like changes that are very different from the way they used to do things.
See, it's a season of change around here, John. That's what the month of February seemingly is all about. I know you and I think we'll be at the Penn State will have their thon availability this weekend. The 46-hour right. dance marathon's going on, which the football team, like all of athletics, always has a role in that.
And so they'll make some players available to us then. We'll see who that is.
We'll see who those folks are. Talk to them. I know I've got a story up on The Athletic today that was interesting. There's a little bit of a Penn State angle, but more of a wide look all throughout college football. Myself and colleague Grace Rayner went and tracked down current and former college football coaches and asked them about one of their probably least favorite subjects. We wanted to know, who are the recruits that got away? Which recruits broke their hearts in honor of Valentine's Day? There are some great answers within that story. And it was also, you know, we were putting this together while coaches were out on the road. And it's like, you know, they're calling you between visits or they're texting you back. And, hey, I'm going here. I'm at this high school. I'm doing this and that. So that was a very, very fun story. I will tell you, I talked with Joe Moorhead and Penn State fans. Joe Moorhead's biggest recruiting heartbreak is one that I know many of you have also thought about, one that ripped your heart out, one that is one of the greatest college football what ifs, that of course being the loss of Justin Fields.
So it really is a great what if too.
Crazy. Like, you talk about the butterfly effect, right? Like, it was one of those stories that you peel back the layers, and the anecdote in the story from Joe Moorhead that you'll want to check out on The Athletic was a really good retelling of kind of, you know, the months where Justin Fields was committed, where they felt like they had something special, you know, and then ultimately he, in a nice way, but rips your heart out and decides that he's going to go elsewhere.
Yeah. Make sure you check that story out over at The Athletic. I will be doing the same. It is on the reading list along with the 40 other things I've added over the last 2 days.
Keep adding to the list.
That's right. We've been working more over the last 2 days, so I haven't done as much reading as I would like. That will surely be on one of the things that I do after the men's basketball game tonight. I have a notebook up from yesterday's availability up on sundaydaily.com. Check that out if you'd like. We will be around over the next few months. We will be podcasting as things happen. Just in case we don't record before the combine, who is your one Penn State player that is going to surpass expectation, is going to like have that performance, right? Like the guy that's going to shoot up boards.
I know I'm putting
you on the spot. I do have.
Yeah, an I mean, we know, like, we know Olu Fashanu is going to be a lock, right? I feel like Chop Robinson, we know, is going to be mostly a lock, right? I know there is some consternation about whether or not Kalen King gets into the first round or not, right? I know there's some.
I don't know if there is anymore.
I was going to say, do you feel like that since the Senior Bowl, that you feel like that has been washed away?
This isn't my pick for who will be.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's my pick. Level.
I'm saying I do think he will help himself at the combine. Mm-hmm. And so he could regain some of that. But as of now, yeah, he's pretty universally projected as a second round pick. And talking to people in the NFL that, you know, I've heard much the same, right? That the general idea right now is day two. I do think he'll do well at the combine, though, and that will help him out.
Yeah, I feel like Chop Robinson is someone that we're going to say, like, just because we don't, I mean, because he was only here for 2 years and he was hurt for part of last year, so we didn't get to talk to him a ton while he was here. But I feel like his testing numbers when he was here, thinking back, I'm trying to remember if he was on Bruce's freaks list last year or not. I know Olu's got some freaky numbers. I feel like he might have been. I'll go with Chop, which feels like a bit of a safe pick. Maybe Curtis Jacobs is one of those guys who, you know, probably maybe puts up some good testing numbers, good speed, that type of thing. Who's your pick, John? Who's the person that you have in mind that I'm like missing?
So there were two that I was thinking of. By the way, Chop was number 9 on the freaks list. Olu was 23 as I look these things up as I speak to you now.
There we go. See?
There are two guys that I think are going to, one, I think King's going to help himself, but he's not one of the two. But there are two guys that I think could really shoot up the board. One, the one I'm not going to pick is Adisa Isaac, because he's already moving up because of his Senior Bowl performance. Because again, you talk to people, like they're really, as they dive in deeper, they really like Adisa. This is something I think you and I have talked about. I don't know if we've done it on here, but I think there's a chance that he's the first defensive end from Penn State taken in this draft. I think they've got a legitimate chance to get both guys in the first round.
That's a bit of a take, John. That's interesting.
I think he's going to have an excellent combine. I think he's going to have an excellent pro day as he continues to, you know, I don't think people understand how athletic he is, right? I think Chomp having like one of the best first steps I've ever seen, if not the best first step I've ever seen, has kind of overshadowed how athletic Adisa is. But I do think that he's going to do well at the combine. But my choice, maybe this is obvious, is Theo Johnson. I just think like the height, weight, speed stuff is going to blow people away. The length, the hand size, all of it is going to be like, and he's really good too. It helps that some of the production is there and he's been able to perform. But I think he is the guy that right now you see a lot of middle rounds of the draft with him, round three, round four, round five. I think there's a chance he moves up into the second round. That I don't feel as confident about that as I do about Adisa potentially ending up in the first. But yeah, I think that Theo Johnson has a chance to continue his ascent and be a second round pick, because you look, frankly, Brenton Strange went in the second round last year, and every draft class is different. I'm not saying that just because Strange went in the second that Theo will do better, because I think he's a better prospect.
Stranger things have happened.
Boo. I do think he is a better prospect, and I do think he has a legitimate chance to go higher than Brenton Strange did. So that's kind of the one for me. Curtis Jacobs, you're right. I think he's going to do well. I think there's going to be some size questions, though, on like what exactly he is at the next level. Johnny Dixon, like we've already seen the numbers with his
Daquan Hardy's speed is going to be.
Hardy's a good one.
That's going to be fun to see, yeah.
The punt return stuff makes him a little more interesting, too, but he still feels like a potential late round UDFA.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think they have a legitimate chance that we end up seeing three Penn State guys going in the first round, which a lot of people projected heading into the year, but it's not the three that we thought, right? Two of them are in Chop and Olu, but I think Adisa has a chance to get up into that 20 to 32 range, and Kalen probably dropping out at this point to the second round with, again, there are what, 2 months till the draft. There's the whole draft process still has to play out. And I think he has a chance to regain some of that momentum he had prior to the year with his stock, because a lot of this stuff can be narrative based. Some of it, like all it takes is one team to really believe in you. We saw that last year when Sean Clifford went to your beloved Green Bay.
Packers. Knew you were going there. I absolutely knew you were going there.
I don't know that I've ever talked about this on the podcast, but from the teams I talked to, most had him as a UDFA, right? A priority free agent. And like I said, all it takes is one. And the Green Bay just happened to be the one there. But yeah, I think that there is a good chance that we see some Penn State guys steal the show, that we see some stock rise there. Maybe it falls back afterward, because that tends to happen with this stuff, like especially in media mock drafts, right? It's tougher to tell, which, by the way, we do this every year. Myself and Josh Moyer will likely have a mock draft ahead of the NFL draft, which
I just, we nailed some picks last year too. I completed one. Me and some of my college football colleagues at The Athletic, we do one. And the funny thing, well, what I think is funny, I'm sure there's probably some readers out there that are like, don't let her do this. Every year I ask if they'll let me draft for the Bears so I can torpedo them. But nice. They don't let me do that. I was drafting for the Packers, the Eagles, and the Steelers this year. So, John, there were possibilities of me to take some Penn State players for each of those teams, and I did not.
Tyler Guyton or bust. That's all I'm saying. Go well, Birds.
I have one of the three teams taking him, John, and it is not your team.
All right, that's fine. We can argue after this.
It's mine.
But no, Tyler Guyton, obviously shooting up draft boards. I am now fearful that he won't be there when the Eagles pick. But no, I Moyer and I do that mock draft every year. It's a lot of fun. It's not like we're not entirely guessing. Like there is some just putting fit together. We're talking to people, right? Like it's not just these are two random people putting together. Yeah. We nailed a few picks last year. I think we had Bijan at 8, which I, you know, that had been a thing for a while. I'll put it that way. And you know, it's a lot of fun. We are in draft season though. This is one of my favorite times of the year. We will be talking these draft eligible guys and everything.
We'll be at Pro Day.
Yeah, we'll be at Pro Day. We'll, I assume, be recording not long after Pro Day when my spine is shattering from the Haluba Hall turf, which is never fun.
Standing on the turf. What a tough job, John.
What do you want from me? I got a bad back. It's tough. I hate it. If I could simply not have a bad back, I would not. Like if that were my call, I would be doing that. But no, we'll be here for that. I, you know, probably be talking after the combine too, potentially before the combine. We'll see. And as Penn State stuff happens, we'll be around. You of course can find all of that here at the Nittany Dispatch. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. That's always helpful. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button down below. Hit that thumbs up button. It always helps. Find Audrey on Twitter at oddsnyder4. Find me on Twitter at John Sauber. Read Audrey at The Athletic. Read me at centerdaily.com. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.